From the studios at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. As we continue to see heated debate around things like social justice issues, education reform, even what post-pandemic life should be looking like, what seems to be lacking in all of this is a place for kids and their caregivers to actually have resources to be able to talk about these issues as well as these attitudes. Well, joining us today to discuss more is Amber O'Neill. She's the author of the book, A Place to Belong. Amber, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'd love to start the conversation by just asking you, what do you mean by a place to belong?
Well, it means intentionally creating a space in our homes where children can clearly see themselves in others. And in this space, I imagine there is a high degree of self-awareness and celebration of differences, but kinship is still the norm.
You write in the book about how lifelong attitudes are really rooted in the home, that they begin in the home. So can you talk a little bit, you know, more about that? I mean, in particular, as I mentioned, with all of the things going on in our world today, you know, there are discussions happening in the home about all of this too.
Well, yeah, I think so. And I believe that at home is where we can really reach our children because they're with the people they feel most comfortable with typically, and they spend so much of their downtime there. And while it's important, the things that happen in school and the interactions they have, none of those are going to impact our children to the same degree as the time they spend with family in their home environment.
How do we then, I mean, I'm a parent to a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old, and, you know, we definitely have conversations in our home, but I have to say, a lot of times I feel like I'm kind of grasping at straws on how to talk to them about certain things in an age-appropriate way.
Yeah, that can be difficult, I think, for all of us. I have kids similar ages and a bit younger as well. And I find that it's more awkward for us than it is for the children. And so I recommend that parents go ahead and just dive in from a perspective of like, the kids are going to see this conversation as normal. As long as we keep a straight face and we seem relaxed in nature as we're having these tough conversations, and let them in a little bit. And I always tell people that everything we tell our children needs to be true, but we don't have to tell them everything we know on a particular topic. And that's how we can keep it age appropriate.
So in your mind, I mean, and you are definitely, you know, a leading voice on how we talk about things like discrimination, race, gender, disability, class. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I think sometimes maybe these conversations aren't happening in some homes because parents don't know how to start the conversation, or they think, well, they're not old enough yet. And I mean, in our house, I mean, my kids started asking questions about a lot of this, in particular, you know, I mean, gender, because they start noticing their own gender around age, you know, 3 and 4.
Yes, I've seen that with my family as well. And the mistake that my husband and I made, we were trying to shelter our kids from a lot of these harder conversations, thinking that they're still so innocent. We don't want to bring this up to them and put these ideas in their head when they're not even thinking about it. That's what I hear from a lot of parents. But come to find out, our children were thinking about it, and the research backs that up. So children are noticing even differences in skin color as infants, as small toddlers, and it increases as they get older, and the gender differences, like you mentioned, and us not bringing those things up or not being willing to have those conversations doesn't change the thoughts that the children are having. So either we can insert ourselves in as guides, or we can let our children figure it out on their own. And when I thought of it that way, I thought, well, I definitely want to guide those conversations as they're, you know, figuring out their identities.
You know, and I agree with you on that. I think that, you know, in our house, I mean, when you talk about, you know, in particular having, you know, the age of children that I do, things like sex, right? That is something that I think a lot of parents are super uncomfortable talking with their kids about. But my whole thought process along with my husband's was, well, if I think back to when I was a kid, who was having more of those talks? It was my peers, and I thought, well, and I went home and I could ask my parents. I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to be growing up in an environment where I could ask those questions. But I thought back to, well, I want to have those conversations first before my children get misinformation from their peers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know I didn't feel comfortable as a teen asking my parents any of those types of questions. Thankfully, I had older siblings, much older. So they were adults when I was a teen, mm-hmm. and I was asking them. So the questions were still there, even though I didn't have a situation where I felt like my parents were willing to deal with that. And actually, I think in hindsight, they would have been fine. But my fear was kind of retribution. Like if I ask these questions, they're going to want to know where the questions came from. And if uh-huh. I tell them that my friends are talking about these things, I won't be able to hang out with those friends anymore. That was my biggest fear. So I think, you know, letting our children know that no topics are off limits, that we are askable parents, that there is no judgment or retribution for the things that they ask us about. Those are all important factors when we try to have this open dialogue on an ongoing basis throughout childhood.
So how would you approach the subject of something like sex, because I bring that up because I do think it's a very difficult conversation. Because as you mentioned, I think a lot of parents think, well, if they're asking, that means something's going on. And then when you put in maybe faith, religious values around it, it layers the conversation. And I heard something one time where it was like, start with the scientific facts about how things like sex work. Make sure your children understand that. Once they understand that, then you put in your, you know, family's cultural beliefs around it. Something like, well, in our family, we believe X.
Sure. I think that's definitely good advice. I also like to ask questions. Like the kids are asking me questions, and before I give them an answer, I like to ask questions because sometimes I think they're looking for this really deep, detailed information. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh goodness. And I feel my heart beating, my armpits right. getting a little sweaty.
You start
and
then sweating.
Yes. And I'm like, okay, we can talk about that. My voice is getting really high. And then when I ask them a couple clarifying questions, I realize, oh man, they're at level one. And I was about to give a level 8 answer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I think it's important to ask some questions of clarification and find out what is it that they're really after, because maybe you only need to give them what they need in that moment, but you can look and see where their minds are. And sometimes they need the level 8 answer. I mean, you know when your kids are ready. And I knew that when my oldest kids started asking very pointed questions and the lighthearted kind of level 1 answers were no longer satisfying, I met them where they were. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we have to be really, really aware of.
So what about things like history? And what I mean by that is, I mean, these are questions that are coming up in our house, in particular from like our 10-year-old, is around things like not just race, but our country's history regarding that. And you write in the book about, you know, you can have these conversations, once again, in an age-appropriate way.
Yeah, I think when I think of history, I think that it should be taught the same way we teach math. We don't wait until a child's a senior in high school and then throw out calculus and say, ta-da. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the very beginning, they're learning their sums and subtraction, and we're moving up to multiplication and division and fractions and decimals and pre-algebra, and it's going on. And each year, each level of maturity, we're revealing more and more of the body of work. And I think we should treat history in the same way. From the very beginning, we should be honest and giving truthful information. And as they grow and as they go, we should be revealing more and more of the story of man. And that's in our own country and across the world, so that there is never a moment where our children are like, wow, they were withholding things from me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm finding all of this out. That's what happened to me as an adult. It felt embarrassing. I was ashamed that I was an adult and didn't know all of these things. It felt like someone had pulled the wool over my eyes, and that feels bad. So we're trying to prevent that. And I think children can handle it. It's the adults who are assuming and supposing exactly. what kids need. And I think that they're fine to have these conversations.
So before I let you go, how then do we have these conversations in regards to giving our children resources I mean, I know I have found, you know, certain books, things like that. And a lot of times it's like, I just put the book out and, you know, if they want to take a look at it, they can. But I mean, how would you recommend we go about making sure we have things in our home besides just conversation?
Yeah, sure. So I think if we look at it from a kind of multidimensional aspect, yes, books are important, different types of books, historical fiction, biographies, nonfiction, movies and documentaries, having access to family outings. And when we're traveling, looking and see what interesting historical sites or places are in the towns we're visiting, food, music, art, all of these are areas in which to explore, and it helps bring the ideas to life for our children. It also gives us plenty of opportunities to balance the bitter with the sweet.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're so right, as you write in your book, that the children want a place to belong. I mean, as the name of your book says, but they want that awareness. They want to know their self-acceptance. And I think you do such a good job in your book, you know, walking us parents and caregivers through how we can do that. So I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I've really tried hard to create a guide that all families could use. And I hope that it's seen as an inspiring gift.
Well, I want to thank you so much. We've been talking with Amber O'Neill Johnson. She is the author of the new book, A Place to Belong. It is out now. You can also find Amber on Instagram at Heritage Mom Blog. Amber, again, thanks so much for your time today.
I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today on Idaho Matters. Our senior producer is Samantha Wright. Our associate producer is Hannah Gardosky. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.